The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
There are a million plus people just in the New Orleans metro area without power. And the reason why is the transmission lines that bring that power into the city, eight of them are in the Mississippi River. Extracting those and repairing them is going to take some time. While we do have a break from the wind that was very severe here and the rain that fell straight for 16 or so hours, I want to give you a look at what we have behind us here. And it's a portion of a rooftop that was thrown into the French Quarter.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good afternoon. Welcome back. Great to be back with you. Boy, a lot going on in the world, huh? It's good to be here with you this afternoon and be able to give you a look at it. Of course, I'm here for you. You can join the conversation anytime. Feel free to dial in. It's 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. And feel free to give us a quick buzz. You can join the conversation. Maggie, just a quick note here because I just realized my call screen. There you go. Thank you. Lucas is on the phones with us today. So when you give him a call, you'll get a chance to talk to him. He produces a little bit later in the day after the show for Cal and Timmery. And say hello to him when you call in. Look, let's start with Afghanistan. We got a lot to get into today. You're going to love the show. It's a mixed bag. And some of the things I think you'll never have heard before coming up a little later in the hour. But the last American forces, of course, as we talked about yesterday, they left Afghanistan. And I sit here a little befuddled. I got to be honest with you, because I've been saying this to you for days. And I actually stand corrected. I always say I don't know everything, right? I try to read the signs. I try to read human hearts and think that people are good. They're going to do what's right. They're going to do what's just. They're going to do what is moral. And I just could not imagine that any administration, I don't care who it is, would leave Americans behind. I mean, I called that one wrong. I swore. I really was convinced it was a political game. It was political maneuvering to keep the Taliban at bay so they would cooperate until the date came. And when our men and women were not out, we'd push that back another week or another day or however long we wanted. Yet we saw what happened. I was sick, literally, when I saw that general come on and proudly announced that our last troops are out of there. And believe me, I'm glad that our troops are out. Thank God they're safe. But I am sickened that anyone in command, any political leader, could leave a fellow American behind. Imagine if that was your spouse. Imagine that was you. And you're desperate to get out. You have no way to get out knowing you're going to leave behind your family. Imagine if it was your son or your daughter there, your sibling. I mean, I called it wrong. Maybe something else will happen. You know, maybe we'll see other initiatives take place. And I know there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes and there's other efforts underway. But for the U.S. military to leave with its tail between its legs, it's shameful. On the national scene, it's just shameful here. In the sense of morality, it's wrong. It's just absolutely wrong. You know, we don't leave anybody behind. Now, the Pentagon admitted yesterday they didn't get everyone out. Not everybody we wanted to get out. A lot of people are using this term. They're saying it's unforgivable. Unforgivable is what they're saying. You know, I don't like to ever say anything's unforgivable. I don't like that term. But I don't know the right term for it. I don't know what to call this. I mean, it is unforgivable. I mean, it's a terrible thing to leave a fellow American behind those lines. And, of course, this withdrawal is far worse than what happened in Saigon. Whoever thought that would be the case with the technology and the military might and all that we had. On Sunday, Senator Ben Sasse, who sits on the Intelligence Committee, he shared his thoughts on Afghanistan and the exit. He was on ABC News, and, boy, he was fiery. Listen to Senator Sasse.
We have American citizens who are being left behind. We have American green holders who are being left behind. We have Afghan allies who are SIV holders, folks who fought alongside us, drivers, translators, people who actually fought with us. These people are people to whom we made commitments. We have NATO allies who are livid at us. There are some groups. I'm on the Intelligence Committee, as you know, and there are some small ways to try to do things around the margins. But what we need is a commander-in-chief that actually has a big plan and a big way to solve this problem. President Biden has been repeatedly disconnected from reality. The consequences are going to be a return of a Taliban that has been willing to provide safe haven to terrorists in the past. And right now, they don't even have the power to make a decision about who they are or aren't going to provide safe haven to. We've got Al-Qaeda and Al-Qaeda affiliates. We've got the Haqqani Network. We've got ISIS-K. We've got Talibani folks themselves who are killers. We have so many different groups who want to turn Afghanistan into the global capital city of jihad, and the administration doesn't have a plan. They've got all this over-the-horizon talk that is laughably shallow. If you actually sit in intelligence committee meetings and you hear what over-the-horizon looks like, it is a pittance compared to what we just had on the ground. Abandoning Bagram base will be read about in military textbooks for decades as one of the stupidest military blunders ever.
Does that not frustrate you? What happened to logic? What happened to clear thinking? What happened to doing what's right? You know, we're leaving Americans behind to a group, as Senator Sass pointed out, is going to implement jihad. Maggie this morning, you know, my producer here on the show, she sent Tom, my other producer, Tom, and I both a text. And I think she did something like, hey, sorry to start your day with such bad news. But she sent a text over saying that, you know, we left, what, $85, $90 billion worth of technology there, Black Hawk, you know, helicopters and Chinooks and all sorts of other things, right? Well, this group, they're using American Black Hawk helicopters and chopters that were supposed to be used by the Afghan forces. They were left for the Afghan army, you know, 600 and some thousand machine guns and cannons and aircrafts. And I mean, the amount of weaponry, night vision goggles that we left them, $85 billion, right? Well, now they're using U.S. military aircraft, our Black Hawks, to hang people from them, to execute them, to hang them and then fly their dangling bodies over the city as a warning to others. Now, you mark my word, this is just the beginning. It's just the beginning. Taliban militants were carrying out house-to-house executions in Kabul. And as soon as the U.S. left, they're going door-to-door now, right? They have biometrics, they have passports, they have identities, they have addresses. There was an Afghan man who worked with Americans on the ground and provided Fox News with really what is just chilling audio featuring what is more than likely gunshots and execution.
Alan, sir, I think there is a conflict between Taliban's. I have no idea where I'm located. From everywhere, I hear the sounds of shooting, gunfire. So I have no idea how to leave.
I know it's hard to hear, but you could hear the gunshots in the distance. People are cowering right now. They know they may lose their life. They may be beaten. They may be, their family might be executed. Already people are being told, just to give you a quick snapshot of what's going on in the culture, and we'll be coming, I'll talk more about this a little bit later in this hour, give you a look at what's happening, especially to Christians, but we're being told they can't sing or make music. No, you can't sing, you can't make music. A midwife who was on her way to becoming a doctor, right? Educated woman, gifted intellectually. She's now been forced out of her medical education. Why? Because she's a woman. Because of her gender. Women should not be doctors. Can't have women doctors. How ridiculous, right? So a senior U.S. source was telling Fox News that the Taliban are conducting house-to-house searches. They're executing people on the spot, as you just heard. So this is not anything unusual. I think we're going to see more of it. You know, this is a military defeat that could have been avoided. Afghanistan has long been known as the graveyard of empires. In fact, I want to talk about that coming up. We'll give you some history on that. You know, starting back, well, until the Hun, back in 1839 and ending in 1919, the British, they fought three wars there, and they lost all of them. The Soviet Union They fought there for 10 years, right? They were defeated. A big beating for them. So now the most technologically advanced country ever, the greatest military the world has ever seen, with capabilities that are beyond probably even your imagination, some of the technology that we have. We were spanked and told to leave with our tail between our legs after 20 years of blood and treasure. I mean, really, it's quite unbelievable. Quite unbelievable. Joining me right now, do we have our guest up? I can't tell with my call screen here. Retired Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gaughan is going to be joining me here, and he's Executive Director of Restore Liberty at restore-liberty.org. You can check him out. He's going to be stopping by, and we'll get him to give us a perspective of just a little history, and I think that's really what's important, the historical perspective on where we are here. Where does all this end? Huh? Where does it end? I think a lot of prayer is going to be needed. I think we're going to see a lot of terrorism exported from this particular location as well. You know, yesterday I heard a report on CBN, and they spoke to Christians, and we'll talk about this coming up, that are left in Afghanistan. And listen to this report. I think this is very telling, because it's not just the military defeat that we had, not only the execution of former ops and translators and those who worked with the U.S., but I think Christianity is going to be radically on the crosshairs of this group. This report comes from CBN. I'll give you insight into it. Check this out.
At a safe house in Kabul, Jayuddin, not his real name, has been in hiding along with 12 other Afghans since the Taliban seized control of the city nearly 3 weeks ago.
One of us is always awake during the night, always walking around and praying. So if the Taliban should come and knock on our door, we should alert everyone.
And now they've been marked by the Taliban.
Every day I receive a phone call from a private number, and the person warns me that if he sees me again, he will behead me.
On the eve of the deadline for U.S. troops to leave Afghanistan, Jayuddin and many Afghans and Americans still trapped inside are terrified. In a foreboding sign of what to expect once American troops leave, the Taliban's newly appointed Minister of Education says any curriculum that goes against Islam will be purged immediately. The Taliban follow a very harsh and strict version of Islamic law known as Sharia that often puts women, girls, and members of religious minority groups at extreme risk. While Jayuddin says he's not afraid of dying, he is asking the world to pray for his country.
We are praying for each other that the Lord would put his angels around our house for our protection and safety. We are also praying for peace for everyone in our country.
All right, I would encourage you to do the same thing. This is a military defeat that could have been avoided, as I said. And now we are seeing a lot of people in a lot of trouble, ranging from those who helped the U.S. to just Christian populations in general. As I said, Afghanistan's been called the graveyard of empires. And here to give us some perspective is the executive director of Restore Liberty at restore-liberty.org. I'm joined by retired Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gaughan. He spent 4 years in the Air Force in Afghanistan and was one of the principal designers of the U.S. military NEO, or the non-combat evacuation operations for Afghanistan. And I thought he'd be perfect to talk to you today to get some perspective on what we saw. Lieutenant Colonel, thank you for your time. It's good to have you with us today.
Hey, Drew, thanks for having me on. And only correction is, although I did fly, I was in the Army.
Army, my apologies, sir.
No problem.
My deepest apologies. I have a daughter that's a Marine, and I know how everybody gets regarding, you know, the military area of service that they serve for. So I'm grateful for your service. Let's start with this. The question that's uppermost in the minds of a lot of people is, why did we leave? And maybe you can give me some history too, just in terms of Afghanistan and why it seems that whether you're the Soviet Union, the British Army, the U.S. military, you just can't seem to win in this part of the world.
Yeah, I guess you could chalk it up to the famous phrase, I never get involved in a land war in Asia. It's true.
Yeah, it's true.
Afghanistan is a... I'll start off with some very positive things for you. Mm-hmm. First of all, Afghanistan, after my four tours there, one of the beautiful parts about my job was I flew helicopters. So I got to see the terrain up close and personal while still able to move pretty fast. So you got to see a lot of it. And then you did do things that you got out to interact with the Afghan population still. So you got a mix of all things. Afghanistan is a gorgeous country in many respects. The people there are so many people there that are wonderful people that are only truly seeking to have a level of freedom and to raise their families in peace like any other American right. and most free people would want to. That is a part of Afghanistan that we can't gloss over or forget. It is critical to understanding them. However, obviously it's been used for many years as a base camp of training for a lot of terrorist type entities. And the Taliban is brutal, and that's what they understand is brutality and power.
Yeah.
And there's no way around that. And it is devastating for people like me who served there for 4 years. Some have served longer, some shorter, but we all saw enough to know what is coming to the people of Afghanistan and has already started. Yeah. They do have a fascinating history, though, and. I'll stop there.
I'm fascinated. I love history, and I'd love to know why. I just sit back here, Colonel, I really believe that the U.S. would not leave anyone behind. You know, I know that every U.S. military person, regardless of you know where they serve or how they serve, they would do anything to save their brother or their sister now in the military. And I was just shocked to see the administration. I really thought, and I said this a little bit earlier before you came on, that I thought it was just, you know, political wrangling to keep Taliban working with us in terms of letting our people through. But when the final date came and we still had U.S. people and those who served assisting us, we'd push that back a week, a day, a couple of days, whatever it took. How do you explain us leaving our U.S. troops behind? I don't understand some of the decisions that were made. Why were military personnel withdrawn before civilians were withdrawn?
Well, and that goes to part of what you talked in the beginning about non-combatant evacuation operations, which some of the planning that I worked on was 10 years ago. It's something that is pulled off a shelf and updated fairly routinely, so the situation has changed a lot. But the principles never change, and one of those principles is what you just said, is those in boots, those in uniforms are the last people off the ground after all Americans are clear.
Yeah.
And to violate that principle to anybody in the military is embarrassing and insulting for us. And I can almost guarantee you that as that last C-17 took off out of Kabul airport,
yeah.
An airport I have been into many hundreds of times.
Wow.
They didn't want to be doing that because they knew better.
Yeah.
They knew there were Americans on the ground still. And frankly, let's just call them that there are still soldiers on the ground in a way because they're veterans.
Yep.
They're still there. They're doing all they can through private agencies and groups among themselves and in a variety of organizations to get people out despite
yeah.
the fact that our government basically retreated.
Yeah, and I hope they're successful in rescuing many of these citizens who've been left behind. As a military person, who made the decision? I mean, this is another mystery to me, to close Bagram. And why did we leave it in the middle of the night? Again, we're the U.S. military. I mean, we of all the airports, I would have thought strategically that one may have been a little bit better. But or why not maintain two? Let's keep them both open to expedite, increase the exodus from Afghanistan. Who made that decision, and what was the logic behind it? I don't understand the rationale.
Yeah, if you find that out, please let me know. I can't speak to the physical decision made as far as the departure of that airfield. What I will tell you is that there is only one commander in chief, and ultimately that responsibility lays there.
Mm-hmm.
Who advised him in the specific language that they used to do that, I do not know. If he had asked me,
yeah.
it would have been very simple because, and I'll give you a quick comparison of the two locations. Kabul International Airport is an airport that is surrounded by an extremely dense population and buildings, a lot of buildings. You can see them in the pictures. It's very accurate to the way that airport is built.
Yeah.
It's a terrible place to secure for a lot of reasons, not only because of up close, but because of distance, rocket launches and things like that. Bagram, not that far for me, was a 15-minute flight one way at the worst. Bagram is surrounded by virtually nothing in comparison. And it's an air base, military transportation node. Kabul is a mix of military and civil and a civil airport with Ariana Airlines. If you were going to pick three airports in the entire country, Kandahar, Bagram, and Kabul, of those three, Kabul's the worst.
See, that's what I'm assuming, and just in defense of President Biden, I'm assuming that his military, I would think his experts said, hey, this is the one we should have? Or did he override them? Because if that's the case, this honestly, from where I sit, and I'm not in the military, it almost seems anti-American. I mean, why would you make a decision like that? Lieutenant? I think I must have lost the lieutenant. I'd love to hear his response to that. I don't know whether it was our connection or not. I'm speaking, if you're just joining us, by the way, with retired Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb. He's now Executive Director of Restored Liberty at restore-liberty.org. You can check them out. And again, spent 4 years in the U.S. Army in Afghanistan there, and was one of their principal designers to help, you know, non-combatant evacuations for Afghanistan. So it's good to have him with us.
I'm back, man.
Yeah, I can hear you. It's good to have you back. I was just asking about in defense of the president. You know, I mean, I'm assuming his military, you know, gave him the advice that this is the airport to keep open and to close the others. And if they didn't, if they're that bad, in some respects, it seemed anti-American to me that you would do this because you've compromised lives. We've lost lives. And it's just terrible decision-making. What do you think is behind that? Who do you think is really pulling those strings or making those decisions?
I have a lot of theories
and
very few facts with the specifics of that. And I guess the greater point there would be that we as American citizens need to demand thorough and immediate investigations and accountability at all levels. And I could talk through multiple theories about how that could possibly happen, from international strategies that involve foreign nations who are our adversaries to interpolitical workings. And your imagination can run. But I would say we need everybody to start demanding of all of their representatives that this get investigated. It get investigated now, and we don't let September 1st be some sort of wall, and everything behind the wall is no longer talked about because it's over.
Amen to that. Hey, your organization, how can people find out more about it? Why don't you give it a quick plug for those who are listening?
Okay, thanks so much. Yeah, we're at restore-liberty.org. And yeah, we are really a nationwide grassroots organization with the state directors in some 30 states. We're fairly young. But if I were to give a quick pitch on one of our main focus areas, is that we're going to get involved in school board races and judge races.
All right. Good for you.
Because we need to guard our future, and we need to guard our Constitution.
Amen.
There's a lot more to it, but that's our summary.
That's fantastic. I'll have you back just to talk about that. I think that is so critical. Start on the ground roots, the ground level there. And we need to definitely affect change. We need well-formed citizens, well-formed educators, well-formed judges. Hey, thank you, Colonel. It's good to have you with us today. I really appreciate you being here. And we'll talk again soon, I hope, okay?
Sounds great to me. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. That's Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb. When we come back, we'll talk more. Our conversation will continue. In fact, told you about them hanging people from copters. I'll fill you in a little more.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Thank you. I can't believe I got one.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
888-914-9149.
Yeah, hey, thanks for joining me. It's good to be with you today. Boy, a lot going on. I'll continue to try to give you a look at what's happening in the world, especially what's happening around the world, especially over in Afghanistan. I'm still shell-shocked by our departure. Really am stunned that we left Americans behind. It's so hard to get my head around that, but we'll see what ultimately happens. I have hope that we'll do something, but we'll see. It was a humiliating defeat. I got to be honest about be honest with you about that. I don't know if you feel the same way. You know, we took a knee to the Taliban, and that's just bad in terms of the optics and the way we look with our allied partners and, you know, so many who trusted us on the ground there. But you know who it's really bad for and who never really gets a lot of attention? Christians. Yeah, the real concern, you know, is what is happening right now to our fellow believers who are now left behind. Now, I understand those who work to aid the government, you know, they've got crosshairs on them. They certainly want them. They got the biometrics, they got the addresses, they have all those things. And you're going to see this. I reported a few minutes ago that they're hanging people from helicopters, you know, or the Black Hawks that we left behind, right? They're flying them in circles around the city, the body dangling beneath the chopper, swinging back and forth for all to see. There is tremendous fear for life in that country right now. And I don't know how many Americans are left stranded. I don't know how many of them are Christians. We also don't know how many Afghans helped our forces as translators or with intelligence who are also left behind. We don't know also how many of them are Christian. And the reason for the concern, of course, just to put this in some perspective, a little bit of a different perspective other than a military one, you have to understand the Taliban and their ideology. The Taliban hate Christians. They hate them. And there are numerous reports of instant executions for any Christian who is found. You're a Christian, it's a death sentence. What's going to be even harder is for those former Muslims who have renounced Islam. They were, you know, raised in the Islamic faith, have become Christians. Who knows what kind of torture awaits those, right? But it's not only Christians. It's anyone who does not believe the way the Taliban believes. And that includes Muslims who don't believe that way. It's not just Christians. Hindus. It's the Sikhs. Those are all marked for persecution. You have to understand how nefarious, how evil this organization really is. So when the Taliban ruled back in 1990, they just absolutely forbid outright the buying of any churches. You know, non-Muslims, they had to put a yellow mark on their home. We talked about this in the past, right? They had to mark their houses, non-Muslims. Non-Muslims could not live in the same residence as Muslims. Non-Muslim women, they had to wear a yellow dress with a special mark so that Muslims could avoid them. And as of now, of course, we have no idea what kind of rules they're going to be putting into place. I had shared the fact that, was it a week ago? It was earlier in the week. I mean, time for me is always a blur. I know I say that, but I had shared because of Sharia law now that women, you have to be escorted outside your home. You know, we talked about this female doctor, intelligent, on her way. She's not allowed to finish her education. She's a woman. Women should not have that kind of an education. Taliban probably don't want women to drive. Right? You need an escort outside the home. Now, of course, the Taliban was saying that they want women to join the government. Yeah, you want them to join the government, but when you read Sharia law, you know, the Taliban and requires everybody to do that, a woman has to have a male escort outside the home, right? It's crazy. There was an American woman who was beaten by Taliban thugs. Why? She was outside on the street by herself. Right? They also require women now to wear full burqa. They don't allow girls to be educated beyond elementary grade school level. They see women as being a man's property, your property. And, you know, the horrors of what goes on, with what is unfolding there continues. And I could go through a whole litany of things from exes on the doors and, you know, taking women's daughters and or taking families' daughters and things along those lines. There are people on the front line that are making a difference. There are people who are trying to defend the most vulnerable there. And we're going to speak to Eric Patterson coming up in a quick second here. I was reading a little bit earlier today, and I'll share a quick stat with you here. It says more than 99% of the population is Muslim. The biggest group are Sunni, and 10% are Shia. Among other believers are a relatively equal number of Hindus, Buddhists and Christians. Estimates of the number of Christians in Afghanistan vary from 20,000 to as low as 1,000. 1,000, right? So here's the deal. They live their lives in secret. So these accurate numbers are very hard to pin down. We don't know. We don't know really how many are there. And there was only one Catholic church in that country. It's hidden away in the Italian embassy, and it had to be shut down because of the pandemic that took place. In 2018, they estimated 200 Catholics were in Afghanistan. 200 Catholics. So the territory has been controlled by the Taliban. They killed humanitarian workers who've been accused of spreading Christianity and being foreign spies. And, you know, some leaders of the underground house churches have received letters from the Taliban that they're being watched. And there's concern right now that Christians may be killed outright. And that young Christian girls, guess what's going to happen to you? You're going to be given in marriage to these Taliban fighters. Here's your reward. Thanks for fighting with the Taliban. She's yours. Right? She's yours. So even before the Taliban take over, Christian converts from Islam, they faced ostracization, of course. They faced violence from family members. It's tough. Just a week or two ago, two Indian Jesuits and four missionaries of charity were awaiting evacuation. I don't know whether they got out. If they didn't, we need to pray, because more than likely you'll see them hanging from the bottom of a helicopter or shot to death or tortured in some other way. And I'm not here to scare you. I just want to give you a picture of what's unfolding. And I think it's important that we look at what happens to Christians over there, because it's not just the translators and others. These people are going to be a target of what's now unfolding. And I'm joined right now by Eric Patterson. He's Executive Vice President of Religious Freedom Institute. You can check those guys out at RFI.org. It's RFI.org, the Religious Freedom Institute. And it's good to have him back with us. Eric, good afternoon.
Drew, thanks for having me today.
Yeah, it's good to have you. I mean, this is kind of dark stuff to talk about. I hate it, but it's a reality. And not a whole lot of people are talking about it. I mean, there's a lot to talk about in the mainstream media right now, but I think it's so important that those who listen, that Americans understand how many Christians there are in Afghanistan. What happens to somebody who says, I believe in Jesus Christ and I want to be a follower of him? Tell me what it's like. Am I being over the top? I mean, give us a perspective of what's happening to those who follow Christ in Afghanistan.
Well, Drew, everything that you've said thus far rings true with things that I've seen on the ground in Afghanistan. I followed it for many years, been there a few times. And I'd say that the fundamental thing is this. Despite $1 trillion and all of the Western aid and our presence there for 20 years, Afghanistan has continued before this pullout to be the number two worst religious freedom violator when it comes to Christians after North Korea, according to Open Doors International. So we did not push very hard. Our diplomats, the West, decided, you know, we can look the other way on some of this human rights stuff, especially when it comes to the persecution of Christians. We'll look the other way. We will have a modest security presence. And we're reaping the whirlwind in that, because what we're seeing is that the value structure that devalues women, devalues children, devalues religious minorities like Christians and Shias, all of that as part of that patriarchal, dominating, violent Islamism that the Taliban and others represent, it's all still there. We didn't challenge the value structure over the past 20 years. And so it's there, and now it's raging forth in the hand of these cutthroat Taliban.
Wow. And that's a great point to highlight, too. You know, so often people equate Islam with Muslims. But this branch of Islam that the Taliban embraces is a lot different. How do they treat Muslims, you know, who don't follow their ideology?
Yeah, so there's two things going on here. One is that the Taliban, as well as its local rivals, its Al-Qaeda and ISIS rivals on the ground, they hate the Shia. And so the 10 to 15% of Afghanistan's population who are ethnically different, they're Hazaras, and they worship differently, they're Shias, these folks are an anathema. Their mosques were blown up. Their history was erased during the Taliban era. And so they're under grave threat. And that's not a small group who can be airlifted out. They need our protection as well. And then, of course, the Christian minority, just like you said, is a tiny fledgling church of Catholics and evangelicals for the most part. and they are in very dire situation right now.
So who's helping? Is there anything the international community is doing? Who's helping to stop the persecution and the slaughter?
Well, when it started in such a rapid domino effect, when Joe Biden decided to abandon our friends and abandon the mission just a few weeks ago, it really has toppled over like a house of cards. The good news is that the Universal Church is praying. The good news is that Friends of Afghanistan and Friends of Afghans are working very, very quietly in a variety of ways to either get people out by airlift or by land. Now, right now, as of the American pullout, there's no good air options at present. Western governments ought to pressure the Taliban to reopen airports to commercial and chartered flights and let people go. The Cubans did it in 1980.
Yep.
Vietnam allowed a lot of people to go.
Yep.
A deal can be worked out. Second, people are trying to get out. Uzbekistan closed its border yesterday. So the only real land route right now for most people is to try to get to Pakistan and to get through one of three. There's four, but one was closed yesterday. Three border crossings. There are Christians working on both sides of that border trying to help people.
Yeah, I'm speaking today with Eric Patterson. If you want to join us, we'll take a few calls, too. The number's 888-914-9149. And we're just taking a look at what's happening to the Christians in Afghanistan, especially those who have been left behind. Eric, stay with me. I'm taking just a short pause. When we come back, let's pick it up. We'll take a few calls, and we'll talk more. If you want to check out his organization, it's Religious Freedom Institute, RFI.org. Can read a lot about what's happening there and what you can do to make a difference as well. Our conversation will continue right after this.
Your news, the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your news now.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy begins soon on Relevant Radio.
Another. Great to be here with you today. Thank you for joining us. If you are just tuning in, I'm talking this afternoon about the debacle in Afghanistan as it continues to unfold. We're hearing horrific things that members of the Taliban are doing to Christians and to women and to people who assist at the United States government. And I won't go into all the details of them, but I was just sitting here thinking, the past 10 years, this was off our radar, wasn't it? Did you even give it a second thought? Probably not. For quite a while after 9/11, we were hearing about this all the time, right? And then it kind of disappeared. Now it's back with a vengeance because the Taliban have completely taken over Afghanistan. They're imposing this harsh interpretation of Sharia law on the people of that country. And they're planning to open the country up to groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIS, and they can resume terror operations and if you are a Christian, a follower of Christ, there's going to be some serious, serious issues. Religious persecution, and beyond that, martyrdom. And I think this is an important point to hit on. I mean, we think of that as something that doesn't happen in the 21st century, right? No. There's been more blood spilled in the 20th century alone than all the previous centuries combined. You don't think Christian persecution takes place? You should check out my guest's website. Eye-opening revelation. Check out the Religious Freedom Institute. It's rfi.org. Joined today by the Executive Vice President there, Eric Patterson. Eric, let's pick up on this point because, people think, oh, yeah, well, the persecution's a tough thing. People are losing their lives. We are experiencing, we are witnessing, and we really need to pray for these modern-day martyrs, don't we?
That's exactly right. Whether it's in Pakistan or in Nigeria, but especially in Afghanistan right now, there are Christian martyrs every single day. And in the Afghanistan case, there are some people who will leave the country, but there's other Christians, that 10 to 15,000 people, many who feel called by the Lord to be there. Now, they may be able to keep a low profile. The Lord may protect them in that.
Right.
But the reality is that some are called to be martyrs,
yep.
And that they will be not just killed, but in many cases, tortured, beheaded. Their families will lose everything because of their faith in Jesus Christ. And we need to be actively praying for them, as well as supporting governments and groups that are putting pressure on the Taliban principal practices.
Wow. Let's take a few calls. I've got a few minutes left here. We'll start in Las Vegas, Nevada. Art is listening to us there. Art, hi, you're on the air with Eric Patterson.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is it really fair to call it radical Islam, or is it more just Orthodox Islam? Now, I don't mean to speak negatively of all those people that identify as Muslims, because as a Catholic, I know we're all brothers and sisters, and God loves everybody. And we know that there's a lot of Christians that do terrible things and sometimes even claim to do things on behalf of the church. But the tenets of Christianity, if we obey them, we should be, you know, doing good and showing love to God and to our neighbor. Now, the tenets of Islam, my opinion, is that they don't necessarily share that view. They like, you know, they take the sword. So I think it's more orthodox, especially when they cite the Quran themselves when they're doing these atrocities. Right. That's my point.
Art, thank you. I'm going to let Eric respond. Go ahead, Eric.
Well, Art, this is an important question. And the term that you'll hear me use is violent Islamism. Mm. And it's an important term that many of us who specialize this use. Here's why. You're right that people like the Taliban, people like Al-Qaeda, people like ISIS, what they do is that they distill from the Quran, from Hadiths, but also especially from the teachings of a very small group of scholars like Ibn Taymiyyah back in the 13th century, and that they focus very narrowly their attention. And what are they trying to do? What their justification for violence is that they're going to purify the land by taking it back to the glory days of Islam 1,000 years ago during times of conquest. And so they focus on a very, very narrow set of passages, and especially the words of post-scriptural or post-Quranic authors who say basically the ends justify the means. The ends of slavery, violence, torture, all of that type of stuff, murder, using those as means to the end, which is to purify the country or the area for Islam. That's all fine and dandy. So that's what these groups have in common. And I would say that they really are a subset, although there unfortunately are millions and millions and millions of people who hold to those views.
Yeah. Hey, thank you, Art. Great question. I really appreciate you being here. I only have a moment or two left, too, for you, Art. I'm going to grab a few more calls. We're going to pray the chaplet coming up. But let me ask you, on your website and the efforts you're doing, how can people help, or you know, what would you like to leave everybody with? What information would you like to impart?
Well, thanks for that. We have two staff dedicated full-time to this right now and to various information and rescue efforts. Certainly people could support us, and it would be going directly to helping these types of efforts that I can't really talk about here. The second thing is that the major Christian humanitarian organizations like Catholic Relief, Samaritan's Purse, Operation Blessing, World Vision, I can tell you that every single one of them is engaged on the ground right now, helping on both sides of the Afghanistan-Pakistan border. Wow. And so giving to those types of groups. And then third is prayer. Prayer for wisdom, prayer for protection, prayer for these potential martyrs, prayers for their families, prayers for leaders, even leaders who we think have totally blown it. Praying for the leaders to have wisdom going forward in their activity. All of that is very, very important.
Amen, brother. Look, I'm here for you. As things develop, if you need the platform, give us a call. I'd love to give voice to what's happening because, you know, I know there's a lot of coverage on what's unfolding in Afghanistan, what the Taliban are about and doing, but I think so often this segment of the persecuted are overlooked, and I'm grateful for all your efforts on the ground. Hey, Eric, thank you for being with us today. I appreciate it.
Sure, it's my pleasure, and thank you for calling us not to, just to action, but to prayer. Thank you.
Amen to that. That's Eric Patterson, and he's so right. I mean, he is just so right. Check him out, Religious Freedom Institute, RFI.org, and we need to do that. We need to pray. You know, I had mentioned just a few moments ago, and I'm going to take another call or two here before we pray the chaplet. Christians are being hunted, just so you know. You know, the Taliban are not only actively looking for Afghans who collaborated with the U.S., but they're going door to door. and they're looking for Christians. And there are going to be martyrs. There's going to be blood spilled. I just pray for those souls who have to choose for Christ or not, that they'll have the grace to stand for Christ. I pray that you and I are never put to this test. We may one day have to put our life down for Christ. I don't know. One report I had read said that they are looking at phones to see if people have any kind of Christian apps on them. There are a couple groups out there right now are trying to help people avoid the Taliban. But I shared with you in the past how the monsters told families to put an X on their house door if they had a girl over the age of 12. If they don't do that, the entire family will be executed. So to you fathers, to you mothers out there, you got a daughter who's over 12 living with you, what would you do? Would you put an X on your door and hope that everybody can live? Or would you not, and knowing that you got found out, everybody's going to be executed? I mean, look at those decisions you've got to make. If you do have a child over 12, the child is taken and becomes their slave. This isn't, 1 BC. This is 2021. If a married woman 25 years or older is found, guess what? The Taliban either promptly kill her husband, more than likely that's what they do, and then they do whatever they want to her. They sell her as a sex slave. So we need to pray for these people. I think he's so right. I mean, we need to support those who are getting these people out. But you can't forget these people. I pray every day for our leaders. I mean, I swear every day I pray for our nation, and I pray for other nations and its leaders. And there's so much more on our prayer plate, isn't there? Look at this. Put this on your prayer list, too. Let me take a call or two. You can get us. You can join the conversation anytime. It's 888-914-9149. Ann is listening in Chicago. Ann, thank you for your patience. I know you've been waiting for a long time. Good afternoon.
Yeah, hi, Drew. One thing I just wanted to remark about is that we're your previous discussion with, I think it was a colonel or some sort of military.
Yeah, lieutenant colonel.
From the idea that this is going up the ranks and bad information. The point is, the roosters left the hen house. This is beyond. And I think that we're getting signaled by the fact that Biden looked at his wristwatch after every casket came off the airplane from Afghanistan of those soldiers. Is signaling something very important. Even in his illness, he is taking directions. And so I think at this point, talking about things as if they occur at a logical level, and I mean not logical in the sense of we would like it, but just the fact that we can't discuss this anymore in the way of things being effective. We have to really look at this as spiritual warfare. There's no other avenue of conception at this point. And I think one other thing I wanted to say was this idea that that the Muslim faith is that there's somewhere, someplace, something good about it is offering it a level of respect that it does not deserve, that it has been attributed to very severe forms of violence, and it really was sort of a cheap imitation of Christianity, and it's not the true faith.
Yeah.
So we really cannot reserve the kind of respect that I think should be that we're talking about with regard to.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ann, for a second there.
Catholics cannot do that.
Okay.
And I think at some point in time, the gauntlet has to come down and say, sorry, folks, but this is not humane treatment.
And thank you. I may just hold you because I have a minute or two left, and I'll pick up because you have a number of points there. The last one first. We do have to show love and respect to our Muslim brothers and sisters. Take a look at what Pope Francis has said. Look at John Paul II as well. We have to have this. They had mutual respect for them. Now, we have to be a witness for the truth. And, of course, you're right to the point that Catholicism is the true faith, right? It is. It's the church that Jesus Christ himself established. It's the fullness of that faith. We talked about this yesterday. And if anyone missed the conversation, in the very last hour of my broadcast, and I would encourage you to go back to our podcast. You can go to relevantradio.com. The keyword is the Drew Mariani Show. I spoke a little bit about what Bishop Fulton Sheen, a future saint, he's soon to be beatified, had to say about the Mother of God and how Mary is going to be the bridge. She is going to be the connection that will ultimately help bring about, I believe, the conversion of the Islamic faith. And it's well worth hearing. We talk all about our respect, the relationship, and everything that he said. I think it's pretty telling. But to Anne's other point, and it comes back to what Our Lady at Fatima did indeed say, we do need to pray and we need to fast. We underestimate the power of those things. I know in a minute we'll be praying the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. I'm a adamant believer, huge believer in the power of prayer. You know that. And I think if we all engaged in that, things would change. One final side note, because I only have a few seconds here for you. I don't know if you know this, but I have hope for Afghanistan. In 2017, the only Catholic church in Afghanistan, the only one, consecrated the Muslim country to Our Blessed Mother. You know, as that situation began to deteriorate, sometimes it's darkest before the dawn, right? It looks dark right now. But with consecration, just as we saw with the rise of atheistic, communism and the battle with Russia, right before the fall of the Berlin Wall, consecration changed things. Be right back.